I want to start by saying congrats to the Timberwolves. Coach Vince did a great job in this series, and their whole team created a lot of problems for us. You know, the role players, their stars. Anthony Edwards is, you know, just a special, special talent. And their bigs play really well this series, you know, and the role players. You know, like I said, with the McDaniels and Alexander Walker in particular, Conley hurt us, you know, the way those guys pressured. It's a hell of a team they got.
That's Frank Vogel, the head coach of the Suns, after Game 4. Suns swept by Minnesota, and the Timberwolves have not let up. They've jumped out to a 2-0 lead over the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference semifinals. And I think most people, if you were going to rank the performances of the teams in the postseason, they would put Minnesota first. They have been relentless defensively. But I got to say this, Bic, after the Suns series, I was very curious. How much of this was Minnesota playing well? How much of it was the Suns just kind of fizzling out at the end of a disappointing season? And yeah. And with what I've seen through two games, especially last night, I lean towards Minnesota is playing at a ridiculous level. But I can't, I mean, a lot of people on social media last night were asking the question, does this make you feel better about the Suns?
Right.
Ryan Russillo from The Ringer said, is Phoenix actually good, or something to that effect on social media last night?
Yeah.
Kind of stirred it up a bit.
Yeah.
I can't go that far.
No, I'm glad that's where you land, because that's where I land as well. If you want to take solace in the fact that Minnesota might be better than we all thought, I think we all had that realization when they won the series.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's perfectly fine to take that consolation. I would also say this in return. The Suns had no trouble with the Denver Nuggets in the regular season this year. Maybe there's something off with this Nuggets team as well. I do think what they're doing to the Nuggets, though, defensively, does kind of clarify and recast what we all just experienced. But that being said, when you look at the Suns and their flaws independently of who they're playing, they still don't look like they match up with any of these teams that have these big wings and these athletes and this youth and these role players and the three-point shooters. It looks like they're missing a lot, regardless of who they played and who they lost to.
And, I agree with that.
That's where I fall.
Big deal. The Timberwolves are even better than we thought. Well, the Timberwolves destroyed the Suns.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it was really close and said, oh, well, the only team the Suns couldn't beat was the Minnesota Timberwolves. They looked miles away from the Timberwolves.
Are Lakers fans actually feeling worse that they were, you know, beaten five games by the Nuggets, who are now getting destroyed by the Timberwolves? I don't know.
Some of them probably are.
Maybe
some of the more fatalistic Lakers fans probably are.
I wouldn't blame a Suns fan, because what we've been through, what we were through this year, was very traumatic. It was very painful. So if you're looking for ways to kind of ease that, have at it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Last year, the Suns won two games versus the Nuggets, and then the Nuggets wound up winning the championship.
Mm-hmm.
There was people saying the Suns played the Nuggets the best of any team in the entire playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that people took solace in.
Yep.
This doesn't feel like that.
No, they only took, I mean, they were the only team to take two games off the Nuggets in a series last year on their way to the championship. I agree with Jarrett. Like, I think even though that team was weird and was coming together late with Kevin Durant only playing the last eight regular season games,
mm-hmm.
there was maybe that feeling of, okay, maybe they did have something cooking a little bit. And if they wanted to use the we just ran out of time factor last year, you'd buy it more. I have to look just at the Suns. I think you have to eliminate the competition in this instance. Yes, Minnesota's playing really well, and they're making Denver look broken, but 49 wins, a six seed, and being swept in the first round of the playoffs
mm-hmm.
is not acceptable.
No,
not acceptable for this roster.
Exactly.
And that I can't get on board with changing because Minnesota's playing so well.
I agree with that.
Now, does it change if Minnesota goes on and wins the title? I don't even think it does, because like Jarrett said, it's not like the Suns were they were not competitive for 75% of that series.
Yeah. Then I think if you really wanted to do gymnastics to make yourself feel better, you'll go, well, we lost to the team that rolled through everybody and we didn't have Grayson Allen. So there, we're absolved. Again, if you need that kind of stuff to feel better, have at it. Nobody wants you as a Suns fan to carry around that awful pain and all that stuff. So I get the need for this. I get why you want to do this. I think you kind of get in danger of it working both ways. There have been times when you try to relate how a team does against another team and stack it up against your team, there, would you feel better if you were a Suns fan, or would you feel worse if you were a Suns fan if the Nuggets had handled the Timberwolves in the first two games? If we'd have gone, oh, that team isn't even that good. I don't know.
I don't know if it might have the opposite effect.
So I don't know. I don't know if it really relates to the pain that we all felt and the weaknesses we all saw with this basketball.
That was what happened the year before when the Suns lost to the Dallas Mavericks inexplicably. Mm-hmm. And then Mavericks just got killed the next round.
Next round.
And everyone was like, well, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
The thing is, you can't even really lie to yourself as a Suns fan. I lie to myself often about my sports fandom. Hi, U of A. but you can't because they didn't even look good going into the postseason.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's part of what it was, too. A lot of these flaws that we saw in the postseason, they were not new flaws.
Yeah.
Failure confirmed.
When the Suns were eliminated in the playoffs, one of the questions we didn't ask was, well, what the hell happened? They looked so good. We had such high expectations. Any high expectations we had for this team was based on hope, not based on the results of the mm-hmm. entire season, really.
Yeah, I mean
they finished, we talked about this in real time. They finished winning 7 of the 10 games and a really hard stretch. But it didn't feel like, oh my goodness, here we go now.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a total gearing up for the playoffs. Let me take it a step further. We would all agree right now that Minnesota looks like a team that could win it all, right?
They do, yeah.
What effect will that have on Suns fans? You rewind a year ago after the Nuggets beat the Suns in the semifinals, went on to win the title. I was rooting against Denver solely for the fact that I didn't want the Denver Nuggets to achieve the ultimate goal of winning a championship before the Phoenix Suns did. They hadn't waited as long. They hadn't suffered enough.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that hadn't won a playoff series in 20 years going into this postseason, a team that was, born in 1989, 31 years after the Suns were born?
Oof.
They might join that list of teams that wins a championship.
Yeah, that
Suns.
List. Yeah, listen, that does hurt. That would hurt. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, when teams continue to get picked off that list and mm-hmm. we're just kind of sitting there at
especially
the top.
Because they were the franchise that was supposed to have made the absolutely horrible franchise-killing trade.
Yeah.
Not us.
Yeah.
With that Gobert move, and it worked out.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, but man, they look unbeatable right
what,
now.
They suffocated.
Yes.
Denver last night. I said this after game one. I couldn't believe some of the hesitation and confusion in game one from that Denver offense. Last night, they lost their ever-loving minds.
Have you seen Jokic ever look worse than that?
Never. Never.
I mean, Jamal Murray's a streaky player, but he was completely broken, too.
Wow.
It's impressive.
Yeah, no doubt.
Coming up next, a sports book put out a list of quarterback rankings in the NFL that both excited Cardinal fans and infuriated them. We will explore it a little further next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. How much better will the Arizona Cardinals defense be this season? We'll ask 15-year NFL veteran Lorenzo Alexander at 1 o'clock. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Yeah, no, I think that was a huge part of what we were able to see. You know, I mean, hey, listen, it was a challenge for Kyler last year to come off a major injury like he did and then to have to adapt to a new offense without having the spring, without having training camp, without having half the season. And so, you know, as he was working back both physically and then mentally, really hit his stride there, especially that last month of the season. So, you know, I think we're really fired up to see him have a full offseason of of training and not of off-season of rehab. And, you know, really excited here in the next week or two to be able to get him out on the field with his teammates. And then as we get into OTAs with our new players and the players that have been here, just excited to build upon what we had there the last month of the season. And you know, think there's a lot of good things ahead for our entire organization.
Monty Austinfort, the GM of the Arizona Cardinals, on the NFL Draft Show here on Arizona Sports after the first round activity of the Cardinals. And, of course, that involved getting Marvin Harrison Jr. But on the Kyler Murray front, I think Monty Austinfort hits on some big things there. Why this offseason is so much different for Kyler Murray. And it's threefold. He's not rehabbing. We know mm-hmm. that. He's got a year in the system. We know that. And he's got a legit number one threat at wide receiver for the first time in a couple years. We know that. So that all three reasons for optimism brings me back to something that FanDuel put out on social media last week. this is pretty interesting. They went division by division on a graphic that they tweeted out or posted on X with the best quarterback in each division.
Mm-hmm.
For the NFC West, and Kyler Murray was their pick for the NFC West, which we'll get into. But they have the seven other quarterbacks that they picked, normal headshot photos of them. They had Kyler Murray's cutoff halfway, indicating that he's very short.
Yeah.
Cardinal fans.
Very, very short.
Yeah. Wow. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. A joke about his height. Who knew?
It's the oldest joke in professional sports.
Yeah.
But let's focus on the first part of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to pick your quarterback, your best quarterback right now, based on where we are for all four of the teams in the NFC West, would Kyler Murray be your pick for the best quarterback in the NFC West?
I would have a hard... Matthew Stafford's coming off a good year. So and he's won a Super Bowl. I would say he's close, but I would have a hard time putting him over Matthew Stafford.
See, my pick? Brock Purdy.
Wow. Okay.
And people say, oh, it's all part of the system.
No.
You have to consider that, don't you?
Of course you do. Of course you do.
He works really well in that system.
Uh-huh.
I'm not disagreeing with you on Stafford either. I think if you want to flip a coin between Stafford and Murray, that's fair. So Kyler, in my opinion, right now going into the season, he might be the third best quarterback.
Might be. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you basing this on ability, or are you basing this on who's going to have most success with their team? Because let's suppose you switched around all the QBs in the division right now.
Mm-hmm.
Who would fare the best on the other teams and stuff?
But as Vinny's saying, that's not fair to Brock Purdy. For as many people who make fun of Kyler Murray's height, it's as equally inappropriate to blame to
system quarterback.
Yes. Oh, he just does what the... Okay.
Game manager.
But he's doing it.
Yeah, and he's doing it at a high level. To your question, Jarrett, for me, especially in a division like the NFC West where it's four returning quarterbacks, we know we've got a track record of all four of these guys with their respective teams, so there's very little in terms of projections.
Mm-hmm.
What do I think is going to happen in 2024? This is a division for me that's based on what have they done? Mm-hmm. What have we seen from them? Now, Kyler Murray's got the ability to be the clear-cut number one.
Right.
From the talent standpoint, I think he's the most talented of the quarterbacks in the division.
All
things considered,
yeah.
I'd have him number two or number three right now.
So to get back to FanDuel and what they did, you talk about a tired gag. This is like an Andy Reid joke from Jared Carlin.
Just old,
and tired, stale,
recycled.
Vinny and I, we were in Nashville.
It has been 5 years. Jokes.
The last one I did do was started off 2 weeks ago, Sports Club, and it was met to absolute silence and groans from you three.
Uh-huh. That's
so
right.
I can't say that I do them, and you still laugh at them anymore.
That's true. You're right. We've been biased. Yeah. Okay. I think that when Vinny and I were in Nashville, when we the first night we met Kyler Murray in person, Vinny and I both had the same reaction. Wow, he's not short at all. Not compared to the human population. Right? I think Kyler Murray's, the fact that Kyler Murray has got a thickness to him and is very, very muscular, kind of it makes him really stand out in a different way than most people in football. But dude is 5'10". I mean, he's a legit 5'10".
No, is that... No. And we've gone through this. That's short for a quarterback.
Of course it is.
But it's not like it hasn't rendered him useless in the NFL, which some people argued it would.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a you know, potentially a top flight quarterback in this game.
Right. And but exactly. But the fact remains that, you know, the short players in basketball, they don't get this kind of smoke.
That's true. And that's a sport much more based on your height.
Yeah.
And also Bryce Young is, I think, a quarter inch shorter than Kyler Murray and smaller than mm-hmm. Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely more slightly built.
And again, you know what I'm saying? You know my golden rule. If you're over 25 and you're still making fun of people's appearances, the issue is you.
Agree. Real right. insecure
the
losers.
The issue is
what
you.
What if you're over 40 and you're still doing
now, something wrong with
Jared,
you.
I give Jared a break because I know Jared doesn't do it maliciously. But I know a lot of people out there who are above the age 25 who make fun of people maliciously because of how they look. The problem is you if you're that person.
Fair.
Right. I mean, that's about as immature as you can be.
What are you more sick of? The Kyler Murray is short jokes and comments, or the Kyler Murray plays the video games, Call of Duty, too much and doesn't prepare for games? Because they're both the one and 1A of national criticism of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the 1A criticism of him, I think the Call of Duty thing once was based in reality. What didn't Kyler Murray come out, or was that DeAndre Ayton who came out and admitted he doesn't?
Oh, that was DeAndre Ayton. Yeah, he doesn't sleep at night because right. he plays video
but
games.
There was a time where Phoenix, Arizona had three athletes that were absolutely raked over the coals for doing something that 99% yeah. of professional athletes do.
Ayton, this generation.
Booker and Murray all got that treatment.
And you should be happy that these athletes are doing that and not out in the clubs.
James Harden doesn't play Call
right.
of Duty.
That's oh. right. No.
Different kind of skin.
He plays Call of Booty.
Hey. Call of Booty. That is indeed true.
Wait, is that a real game?
Listen, during the pandemic, I remember talking to a rideshare guy who was like, you wouldn't believe the people I'm taking over to James Harden's place. Call a booty.
That booty.
I'm a big fan of booty.
I want to revisit this story, too, to see how much we agree with FanDuel's picks for the best quarterback in each division. Yeah. And I'll just let the cat out of the bag now. We'll circle back to it. My picks differed in four of the divisions.
Oh, okay.
So half of the divisions, I had a different quarterback than what they had.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Coming up next, Sarah Cazell will take us through the big stories on this Tuesday in the Rush Hour reboot. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Booty cheeks.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot. Here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Yes, I am back from my one-day sabbatical.
I don't like it. You don't like it. We'll get through it together, okay, guys?
Right.
That was pretty funny, Jared. Appreciate that. All right. This is when we get you caught up on everything you need to know in Valley sports and beyond. So let's jump in. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey.
Vince Marotta. Hey. And Jared Carlin.
No, I really don't like any of the listeners.
Can confirm. All right. The D-backs are on the road for two series starting in Cincinnati today. They got Ryan Nelson back from injury on Sunday. And it is possible, guys, that they will get Paul Sewald and Alec Thomas back. If not today, at some point in this Cincinnati series. Sewald and Thomas are with the team, and Sewald said a couple of days ago on Sunday that he thinks their return can help jumpstart some energy for this flailing team.
I think it's huge getting Ryan back, getting me back, getting Alec back this week. I think we'll probably get a little bit of momentum. You know, when you put three of your 26 best players in the organization back on the roster, that'll definitely help. So we have to play better all together. You know, that's not Ryan, that's not me, that's not AT's job to try and, you know, get us back. But at some point, you know, just making sure that everyone knows, like, there's somebody behind me that's, you know, very capable as well. Hopefully we'll kind of bring us together and kind of go up for a winning streak.
Is that Creed or is that Nickelback?
I couldn't even concentrate. I think it's Nickelback. That might be the bigger story here.
Yeah. But they are unironically back. Yes. Okay, when you guys look at the laundry list of issues that the D-backs are facing right now, where do you put the return of Sewald and the return of Thomas as far as, thank goodness, this is going to solve their problems?
I think the return of Sewald more so than the return of Alec Thomas. I think just because of the, and this is a discussion that has been had many times since the addition of Paul Sewald, the order that he brings to the the role and the role clarity and the definition he brings to the bullpen is bigger than just what he does by himself.
Certainly.
Yeah. So I would rate Paul Sewald well above Alec Thomas in terms of the importance.
I'm going to go the opposite way, actually. I agree with what Bick said, but I will say this. I think in Sewald's absence, for the most part, when the Diamondbacks are in the game situation to use their A bullpen, and that is protecting a lead, trying to close it out, Ryan Thompson and Kevin Ginkle have still been very good. Now, Sewald adds to that. Great to have him back. Mm-hmm. Alec Thomas defensively sets a tone for this team.
Yeah.
I think they missed that, although Corbin Carroll in center is still very, very good. But I like Alec Thomas coming back because it shines a light on Corbin Carroll a little bit more. And the Diamondbacks are going to have to make a decision on what they're going to do with those outfield positions. You can't carry that many outfielders.
Yeah,
you
know, that's true.
I don't think Randall Grichuk's going anywhere. You know, Jake McCarthy is really making it difficult for him to be sent down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pavin Smith is on the roster right now. He's probably the likely candidate to go down. But Alec Thomas being back, I think, puts a little bit more of a nudge of pressure on Corbin Carroll. So we'll see if that can get him going.
And Alec Thomas, to Vinny's point as well, he's also, last year he was also an agent of chaos. Not like Corbin Carroll.
Not like that, no.
But had his moments.
And I think he is very, and I know he's been around the team before he went on his rehab stint, but I think Alec Thomas is very important to the psyche of this team. Like, he seems to be one of the guys that's got a real positive vibe in the dugout.
Great energy about him, certainly. All right, 3:40 start in Cincinnati and on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. Zach Gallen slated to pitch today. Let's get to the Suns. We are still on Frank Vogel watch. Flex from Jersey of PHNX tweeted a couple of days ago that he expected news about Frank Vogel either yesterday or today. Obviously, nothing happened yesterday, so we're still waiting to see if anything comes down regarding Vogel's future. Rick Bucher of FS1 said on this show yesterday that he was a little surprised Vogel hadn't been fired yet, but perhaps he will be retained after all.
There's two schools of thought. One of them is, Frank's not the right fit for this group. And the other is where you are right now, you need some continuity. You need to build from here.
All right, now we are a little over a week removed from the Suns' sweep in the first round. Do you have a gut feeling either way on what's going to happen with Frank Vogel?
It, like Vinny said earlier, I agree with him. The fact that this is going on, that this is stretched into this week, leads you to believe that the chances of him returning have gotten better over the weekend. The question is, why? That, to me, is the question that during all these interviews, as Matt Ishbia and James Jones and Josh Bartlestein, have they heard that, maybe if we do move Kevin Durant, maybe that's the—I don't know, Sarah. I don't know what they could be hearing that would make them believe this is not as bad as what we all witnessed.
So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, do I have a gut? My gut tells me exactly what Bick just said, that he is staying. Why is the next question? And I don't know if we ever get those answers. But it seemed like, and let's go back to before game four when Frank Vogel very confidently stated to the media, I'm very confident that I'll be back. I've got the full support of Matt Ishbia.
Yep.
And Matt Ishbia really didn't, other than avoiding the topic in that press conference, he didn't say anything that was like a red flag that Vogel could be gone. And James Jones went as far to say, we think Frank Vogel did a great job. So that's what my gut tells me. I might be wrong.
Yeah,
I've been wrong before.
No, the language used at that press conference, it didn't match what we thought we would hear.
Yeah.
No, not at all. All right. We have to get to some very important news out of the college football bowl landscape.
Mm.
The Arizona Bowl in Tucson, which was previously the Barstool Arizona Bowl, it is now the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop. Just rolls right off the tongue there.
Just so you know, I'm efforting the book, football. Snoop.
Are you?
I am efforting. I know a guy.
Wow.
Is it Snoop?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy you know is Snoop?
Yeah.
That's what I'm...
No, okay. I know a guy who's fairly close to Snoop. So I'm efforting, Jarrett, trying to put you to shame.
I hope the guy you know is works purely in legal.
Bickley efforting to book Snoop, Jarrett taking a snooze.
He looks like a young Snoop Dogg.
So when he announced it yesterday, Snoop Dogg.
I'm ready to bring the juice back to college football.
He's ready to bring the juice back. He said he's going to be part of the game broadcast, and there's going to be some sort of musical element involving him with the bowl game as well. If you could pick any musician to sponsor your bowl game, who are you picking, and what's the bowl game called?
What a great question.
Ooh.
I think that... what's the answer here? I would have to bring Angus Young, and we'll call it For Those About to Rock Bowl, or the Highway to Hell Bowl.
I dig those. I would pick Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, and it would be called the Every Bowl is Exactly the Same Bowl.
How about the Tackle Me Baby One More Time Bowl?
That's good.
I guess you could just keep it at hit, too.
You could. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks, Sarah. Rush Hour Reboot every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, leading into the NFL draft, the Arizona Cardinals were warned by many. Don't overthink your pick at number 4. Well, they didn't. We've got more details on it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
The Trent Reznor head like a ball.
Hey, it's Wolf. How much better will the Arizona Cardinals defense be this season? We'll ask 15-year NFL veteran Lorenzo Alexander at 1 o'clock. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
We had those initial discussions with multiple teams, and then once those first three picks came, and we took those phone calls, and it really ultimately there was nothing that came close to getting us to move off that pick. So we had done a ton of work on Marvin, and really at that point it was really a no-brainer for us, and we were excited to put that pick in at that point.
Monty Ossendorf,
what is up?
Monty Ossendorf, general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, talking with Rich Eisen on the Rich Eisen Show yesterday, and detailed the whole process basically saying it was a no-brainer for Marvin Harrison, the way things shook out, but also a no-brainer in terms of the player. And in that interview, Monty Ossendorf also talked about how valuable the process was a year ago in attending C.J. Stroud's Pro Day. Marvin Harrison was one of the receivers C.J. Stroud was throwing to that day. Now, Marvin Harrison didn't do much in terms of working out or preparation at the combine or pro days, but the Cardinals in that spot and with all their tape and diligence they did in their meetings at the combine and their top 30 meeting with Marvin Harrison Jr., they had their mind made up that that was the guy.
Well, and so that would answer the question, how much separation was there between those three wide receivers at the top of the draft? And if Monty Ossendorf was giving you the 100% honest to God's truth and not just doing GM speak, in terms of, well, there was no other choice. Yeah, that's what everyone's going to say. But if in this case, I happen to believe it to be true. The thing for me now is, and the people's perception of Marvin Harrison has not stopped, by the way. The more and more this story of him not signing the NFLPA merchandising agreement, people are framing that as, oh, this guy's going to be a problem. This guy's going to be a deal. There's nothing wrong with dudes who choose to chart their own path like that. Sorry if it messes up your video game.
Yeah, sorry if you got to order a customized jersey.
Well, yeah, and it's so he's got a deal with Fanatics he had in college as part of an NIL deal, and he's using the NFLPA merchandising agreement as leverage to expand that Fanatics deal. Okay, that to me isn't a character flaw. You see this all the time in football, and people really need to challenge the old guard at all times with this, that old-time belief that if you are not willing to jump through hoops of fire for this sport, something is wrong with you. You're not good enough.
Yeah, that's definitely the thinking.
Oh, and we've heard that from a lot of people. Charles Davis, during his last visit with us, really laid it out there about how the new scouts in the NFL, they don't think that with that sort of set of parameters.
Yeah.
Obedience, obeyance, fall in line, all that stuff, it doesn't matter anymore.
On a side note, and I don't know if we'll be around to see this, Bick, but there will be a time in the future where professional sports drafts are going to be a thing of the past. Because players will cause a stink. Why do I have to go play for that team?
Yeah.
Why
are you
penalizing
me?
Why am I not free to go work where I want to work based on something that started in the 1930s?
Yeah, that's a good point.
When the Chicago Bears picked Jay Berwanger.
Listen, and you're right about this, because what this does, and people will go, well, this is the NFL. They're built to keep everybody good. And if you're bad, this is the way that you can regenerate and find a way to compete. It also enables the really bad franchises and the really bad owners to continue being really bad, because you sell hope to your fan base. Hey, at least we're getting this guy. Well, you put that guy in a bad, dysfunctional organization. What are you going to get? More dysfunction.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting if we ever do get to that point. If it is free agency for all football players.
And look, the very best players would still, in theory, go to the worst teams that need them because there's an opportunity to play. Mm-hmm. Like a top quarterback is not going to go to the Kansas City Chiefs. Like they're still going to go to a team that needs a quarterback. So it won't necessarily blow up the whole idea of, okay, the bad teams aren't going to get any better. It just gives, you know, options to these players.
It's also interesting to me, though, that we're expecting a wide receiver not just to be a starter, but to be WR1, the team's number one wide receiver.
The next Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been thrown off more than once.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it took Larry Fitzgerald wasn't great in his early stage of his career. He was, as Todd Haley famously called him, a one-trick pony. He was very great at catching the football. And opposite Anquan Boldin and Steve Breston, it was a very, very effective combination. It wasn't Larry's well-roundedness didn't come until a little bit later.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not saying Larry Fitzgerald was not an impact player from the get-gate. He was, but could he have stepped in with Larry Fitzgerald as a rookie? Could he have stepped in as wide receiver one in a group that didn't have a lot of talent around him?
I don't know. That's a good question. But he stepped into a situation where Anquan Boldin was clearly the number one, had one of the great rookie seasons mm-hmm. a wide receiver had ever had at that point.
Yep.
Year two, it came together for Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
103 catches, 1,400 yards, 10 touchdowns, and went to the Pro Bowl. Going back to Mont Diasenfort, he also sat down with Dave Pasch on the Pasch podcast and shared when he knew Harrison Jr. was their guy at number four.
The day that Marvin walked out of my office when he came to visit on his 30 visit, that was the day where, in my head, I had absolutely zero reservations about picking him at number four. I felt confident in Marvin as a player, felt confident in Marvin as a person, and so, you know, felt really good about Marvin being our guy at number four. And then it was just, hey, let's just wait and let the process play out and see if anything comes up. But really nothing ever came close to getting us to move off the pick, and we were excited to pull Marvin's name off at number four there.
Kind of like Kevin Costner in draft day. He wrote on a little yellow piece of paper, Marvin Harrison Jr., no matter what.
Yeah.
Monty Ossenfort with Dave Pasch also talked about their other first-round pick, Darius Robinson, the defensive lineman from Missouri, and what impresses Monty Ossenfort about the former Missouri Tiger.
The day that he got here for his press conference and when he sat in front of that group and really just the way he conveyed his thoughts and this the maturity in and what he's done with his NIL money and setting up his foundation. I mean, I think we all kind of looked around and we're like, holy moly, we can learn something from this guy. You know, like, so just an impressive kid all the way around, just a guy that, you know, obviously we're excited to add his talent on the field, but just excited to add the makeup and the leadership that we think he will eventually be able to grow into here off the field as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him play too. And again, we're talking about a rookie crop of 12 players joining the Cardinals through the draft, 7 of the first 90. That's historic stuff. And there's pressure on those guys now. Now it starts because you get drafted that high, you're counted to play and contribute and add to this building culture. So I'm real curious to see what this class looks like on the field.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And listen, I hope that Marvin Harrison Jr. is that kind of player who can come in and just... Who was the last wide receiver who came? Was it Justin Jefferson as a rookie that just... came in and everybody knew, like, okay, you can't guard this guy.
Puka Nacua had a moment.
He did.
Different kind of player.
But he did. He was a huge impact player. Yeah. But you're right. It was maybe more of a...
It was the value, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like, we didn't really expect this from him.
Right.
Whereas with Marvin Harrison Jr., we will.
Right. With Marvin Harrison Jr., we're hoping for, like, the Calvin Johnson, Justin Jefferson type player, like you said. Like, the immediate, like, oh, my God. This guy's just dominating and taking over.
Well, if that happens, he's going to be double-teamed very quickly by about week 2, week 3.
Yeah. So you're saying a big year for...
What a dorch!
Coming up next.
I was about to say the gig, and I realized, wrong sport, idiot!
But hopefully that too.
We need a Dorch and Gink podcast. That's what we need. Let's add it to the stable of podcasts.
I love it.
On Arizona Sports.
Burgeoning.
Coming up next, Bick's got your blast on this Tuesday.
Fire.
It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.